Cheryl Ray Stout covered the Bulls for quite some time, and she broke the story of Michael Jordan leaving the NBA to go to baseball, and then she broke the story when he returned to the NBA. And Cheryl Stout is with us now on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line. Cheryl, with Brad Thompson and Chris Ronji, this is Randy Carricker. Thanks so much for taking some time with us today.
Anytime. Anything Chris wants, I'll get.
Oh, that's Cheryl. I knew you were going to say that. Thank you. Hey, but we have to tell you something before we really get going.
Yeah, is this actually Cheryl?
If you haven't heard, we did an entire interview on Friday with Bill Wennington, but it turned out it was actually Will Perdue.
Well, they both played for the Bulls, but different times.
Yeah, both big and white. So I think we kind of messed that one up.
I'm sure he enjoyed it.
Oh, he did. He knew pretty much right away, and he decided to do the interview as Bill Wennington when he figured out what was going on. It was a banner day for us on this show. So I know that you like everybody else, watched those first two episodes of the show. What did you think so far?
It was a nice job. I knew all that information, so there was nothing new that I saw. In fact, I was glad that it was brought up about the drug situation that Michael fell into when he was first drafted by the Bulls, because people didn't remember or don't remember how drug-laden the NBA was at that time. And here was this guy who, you know, everyone thought he was going to be good, not knowing how great he was going to be, walks into the situation, and you would see things like, when he was, you know, he'd be looking at, in a huddle. He'd be in the huddle. A lot of the players weren't even there. They'd be sitting on the bench. It was a real disjointed time for him. But that's one of those things I'm glad that they brought up. The fact that they laid the foundation of Michael and Scottie's journey from the time they were kids. So you could understand a little bit more about why they became and why they did what they did as they matured as players.
Cheryl, do you recall your first interaction, the first time that you met Michael?
I can't remember exactly because we got the Bulls broadcast at MAQ Radio in 1985, but I had met him before that, and so he used to come on the air with us before games, and during 85, well, we did lose him when he broke his foot, but we did get him early during the preseason. What was great about my rapport with him was that I was able to build that in pregame. We would be in the locker room, the 45-minute pregame, and Mike would be there every game. And so you could go there and talk to him, and you know, about anything, about the game, what was going on in the league, anything you wanted to, you could talk to. And he was great about, very gracious about doing that. And he was available after games. He was available at practices, which you don't have that anymore. And that was one of the things that I really enjoyed, was they would have double sessions of practices day and night, and I would go sometimes in the night practice and be the only media person there. And so that gave me an opportunity to really talk to him, mind him, and get to know him.
I would think also, Cheryl, that accessibility for you and others in the media probably was part of his way, maybe he didn't realize it at the time, of building that brand.
No doubt about it. And what I learned and was able to talk to him about is the fact is he really knew his place in history and what it was going to be, and very, very cognizant of how he wanted that to look. And, of course, David Falk, his agent, was brilliant. And here's a funny story. When I was in Portland with the Bulls during the 92 championship, Michael Jordan's dad, James, who I got to know really well, too, because he used to travel with us, sit and coach with us when we go to travel to the playoffs. And we were standing in the Portland arena, and James said to me, he said, you know what? When Michael got that deal from Nike, I told him not to take it. It was a bad deal. He said it was the only time Michael didn't listen to him.
Why did he say it was
a
bad
deal?
He just thought his dad just was one of those guys who was very protective of him. He thought maybe he was being used, but Michael knew exactly what he was doing.
And so, Cheryl, you were around for all of his career, you know, in Chicago. And at what point did it really turn into, not the drug circus, but a circus where people were actually showing up to games. Because if you look at some of the early games of him in that building, there ain't nobody in that building. And then, obviously, within a matter of time, you couldn't get a ticket. Do you remember a time where you thought, okay, this is now a thing?
It really started to, you know, remember, the Bears are also very popular then, too. So you're fighting the crowds for, you know, for that factor. But I think when I look back, a couple of things happened. In 85 when and 86 playoffs, when he scored the 63 points, that put him on the board, no doubt about it. But let me, I'm going to scroll back. I'm going to tell you something that happened that year at the auto show. That was the 86 auto show. Michael and I shared the same birthday. And we knew that he was somewhat popular. We didn't know how popular. He was injured. He was driving back to North Carolina to finish college. And our station, MAQ, had a booth with Chevrolet, which was one of his sponsors. And they said, hey, Michael, why don't you come by our booth before we even, you know, before you go on, just, you know, come by. And I had the promotion department got a nice big cake for him. And they announced that Michael Jordan was there at the auto show. And you know, Chris, how big that is. Mm-hmm. In McCormick Place.
Yeah.
Every person that was there came. I had never, ever, ever in my life seen anything like that. Ever. And then once he scored the 63 points, that following year is when you really saw the attention to the Bulls. And definitely in 87, when they had the Horace Grant and the Scottie Pippen, you really saw things building up.
Cheryl, I'm always just amazed by those athletes. Like, we know that playing any sport at the highest level is so demanding anyhow. All the things that you have to do to make yourself better than everybody, and Michael was able to do all that. But then the stuff that you're talking about, having thousands of people show up at an auto show, or if he's going to a bus, there are thousands of people sitting there and waiting for maybe one autograph, if even one gets signed. The weight of that, to me, I feel would get to some people, yet it apparently, at least on the court, never seemed to get to Michael.
He just had he had this ability to drown everything out. He knew he was so he was the most. There's only two athletes I've ever seen this focused, was Michael and Walter Payton. That they were so focused, the way they did things, they knew that they were being crushed around them, but they never let that bother them. I think they kind of enjoyed that. Michael couldn't even go to a movie theater without people, you know, bothering him. So he learned that he had to do his life like a hermit. He would have to go to restaurants after, you know, after they were closed. But you never felt the weight of the world on him until it was starting to build towards where, you know, people were saying he couldn't beat the Pistons. They couldn't, you know, they couldn't get over that hump. And you could see in when they won that first championship how that just he just unloaded all that tension. But he never had tension from the fandom, ever.
Cheryl Ray Stout, who covered Michael's career in Chicago with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Cheryl, obviously we know about Last Dance, but when did any glimmer of hope about that team staying together after the 98 playoffs, when did that end? Clearly it was well before that season started.
It was. We knew immediately that was it. We knew that it was going to be over with. And, you know, Scottie had that foot injury. And when he finally came back and they won, there was so much tension between players and management, players and media, the PR staff and the training staff. I walked in on arguments, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? It was the most hellacious season I've ever covered a team, where you were possibly going to win, but nobody liked each other.
It's amazing to hear that, especially with how good they were on the floor together. And you would kind of think you probably should at least, I know they all respected each other, but you should probably be able to get along outside of that. So it's interesting to hear all that stuff. And I think, Cheryl, way before all of that, one of the most fascinating things that's ever happened in sports is the best player in the world ever in his sport deciding, I'm going to go play baseball now. And I know he had a lot going on, but you were the one that found out about it first.
Well, as I mentioned before, Michael used to talk to us before games. So I had built up this rapport with him for a long time. And a year and a half before he retired, Michael actually did a, he was at Comiskey Park, and he did batting practice, and he, you know, threw in the bullpen and stuff like that for fun. We were in our one of our pregame, you know, BS sessions, and I start talking to him, and he said to me, you know, you sure you love baseball? I said, I love baseball, and I love basketball. He says, when I quit basketball, I'm going to start playing baseball. And I said, Michael, by that time, you're going to be almost 40 years old. You know, there's no way you're going to do it. And he was serious about it. He said, look, I really want to play baseball. It's the sport my dad and I love. That's what I'm going to do. I said, Michael, you're going to be riding buses? You know, how are you going to do that? And he was, I'm not kidding you, he was serious. Scroll up a year and a half later. I get somebody that was aligned with both the White Sox and the Bulls who dropped that nugget with me saying, Michael's going to play baseball. And because I had that previous conversation, I knew that that was a possibility. And the other thing you have to remember, his dad had been murdered in 90, you know, that summer. It was a real difficult time. So what happens, I worked on that story for a couple weeks, and I was able to break that story. And, of course, you know, he was at IIT, and we worked out there. And there was a press conference at IIT with, there was a Topps card that was coming out with Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, and Reggie Jackson. So I went to that press conference, and I had broken the story. It was a big deal. And I'm putting my recorder up, you know, and Michael's sitting there, and he looks at me, and he goes, you've been very busy, haven't you? And I said, yes. I said, is there anything that I've said that's been wrong? Because I knew he listened, or he had people listening to anything that was said and anything that was written. And he said, no, you're fine. There's nothing wrong. You know, your heart's going crazy because you're going, okay, if I mess this up, my credibility and my integrity is gone. But that's why, you know, it was quite a moment for me.
And the other thing that's interesting is when you broke that story, you went on the air at the station you were working at, and the host who was working said, yeah, I don't believe it.
Right. That was Jay Mariotti.
It was Jay Mariotti. Yeah, right.
And thankfully, Tim Weigel, who was a TV sports person here in Chicago, he validated me by saying the story and giving me full credit on the air that night. Yeah, that's the type of stuff I used to deal with. The misogyny was always fun to deal with working at an all-sports station.
I'll bet.
And hey, actually, Cheryl, before we say goodbye, Randy, I want to get this in. There were, in your career, a couple of very important people because you're a broadcaster in sports in the 80s for the first time, and there weren't a whole lot of women who were allowed in the locker room. And there were two people who were extremely helpful to you. Can you tell us about that?
One was Tony La Russa, who I will always thank him, how kind he was to me, because back then I was the only woman going in there, and he took me to all the security guards to make sure that they did not hassle me, and I was very, very grateful for that. But I was covering the Bears games on Sundays or Monday nights, depending on what it was, and I could go in there. But when they had practices during the week, this was during the 80s, this was the famous team from the 80s, when the first time I was assigned to go up there, my boss said, we want you to start covering those practices. I go up there with a couple other media people. I didn't know that no women had ever been in a Bears practice locker room. So I'm ready to go in there, and the players, they yelled at me, they spat at me, they said things to me, and I had to sit outside the locker room and get interviews. I'd have to ask for somebody to come in there. And it wasn't until there was a rookie quarterback that came on, was on that team, and I asked for him, and it was Jim Harbaugh. Jim comes out, and he goes, why is she sitting out here? Why is she out here? When she covers the game, she's in the locker room after games. And the PR person couldn't say anything. And so he literally opened the door for me. He opened the door, and he walked in with me. I'll never forget that kindness, ever. By those two guys.
That's great to hear. Hey, Cheryl, I'm glad that you also said off the top that what is happening with Last Dance, you liked the way it played out last night, and obviously 8 more episodes to go, because we want to see the real thing. And if Michael's involved, as your last word here, you know that this is going to be the real thing. He's not going to pull any punches here.
No. You know what? And I think at this point, I know for a fact, because somebody I know very close to him was telling me that Michael's in a good spot. Michael likes to go on his big fishing boat, and he likes to go fishing. He's very at peace with what he feels at right now, and I think you're going to see that going forward.
Thanks so much for your time. This was really fascinating. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Take care. That is Cheryl Ray Stout, obviously a friend of Chris Ranji, and now of the Fast Lane here on 101 ESPN. Great get, Ranj.
Well, yeah, I mean, we got the right person this time.
That helps.
I guess we'll see tomorrow. We thought we had the right person the entire interview Friday.
You never knew. You never know. That's a really great point. I love how people were texting in and telling us, guys, why do you keep calling him Will? That's not his name. And we're like, wait, we know. He just happened to tell us that he goes by Will. And somebody texted in earlier saying, well, that sounded like Will Perdue to me.
Yeah.
Like, I remember his interviews, and I don't know, I didn't hear it.
Amazing.
Good for us, man.
Coming up, Meat's going to take a look at Twitter and tell us what's trending on 101 ESPN.